law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Hey, if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number. Hey, your question can be just about anything. It can be any area of law that you have a question. It can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates. It can be about personal injury. It can be about family law. It can be about Medicaid, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates, living wills. It can be just about any area you have a question, something you're concerned about, something you want to know more about. If I can help you, I would be more than glad to. Well, you have a toll-free number where you can call the show. Even if you don't have a legal question, just have a problem of some sorts. So you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And all you have to do, the whole purpose of the show is to sit here for 52 minutes and take your calls and answer your questions and help you and help anyone else that might be listening that might have a similar problem or has a question and want to call in. Again, it's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And if you have a question, be my pleasure to help you in any way. We're broadcasting from Jacksonville today. We have offices here in Jacksonville. Met with clients yesterday. And glad to have an office here and visit up here. It's a great area that we've just come to have an office the last couple of years and develop a clientele and so forth. I got an opportunity to speak at a big church here in Jacksonville coming up. I think it's in September it'll be. So we'll be announcing about that and inviting you to come to that as well. If you have a need for a speaker, I do lots of public talks here and there. So if you have I've had several nice presentation groups here in Jacksonville area and always love to do that. So if you have a group that you belong to that has a speaker come in, I come in, we select your topic, we can cater that a little bit, and we can, it doesn't matter to me whether it's 20 minutes or 2 hours. I mean, I do a lot of presentations that are talk for 20 minutes and answer legal questions from the audience for the next 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever you like. If you'd like to contact me for a speaking engagement, you have a toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. And I would be more than glad to come to your group. There's no charge or anything. And those are usually a lot of fun for me and a lot of fun for the audience because we're taking all kinds of legal questions from the audience at some point in the program. All right, let's go to, I only have a partial of your name, so I'm going to guess it's Mary or Maurice. Who am I talking to?
Maureen.
Maureen, okay.
Yes.
That was my next guess.
Thank you for
my screen
call.
Says M-A-U-R, so I was, what can we do for you?
I live in a condo, and we had our assessment done about 3 or 4 years ago. It was $9,000. And we have an annual meeting, and I got the notice on that. And the manager was saying, if we don't fully fund the reserve on our vote again this year, and by the way, last year when it was fully funded, some of the board members did not attend the meeting, and could send in our vote, which we all normally do. And anyway, they went ahead and fully funded it by saying that they canceled the meeting because a lot of the board members weren't there and not enough of us attended the meeting. And, of course, since we always send everything in anyway, I don't know why he didn't have enough votes. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, so now he wants it fully funded every year. And he said if we don't vote to fully fund it this year, we're going to have another assessment. Isn't that blackmail?
Well, they have the right to do an assessment if they don't have funds. You know. I'm gonna tell you a horror story about condos and what makes people should make people very cautious about even buying one. Sometimes, right across from where I stay here in Ponte Vedra, condo had had water problems down from the roof all the way down to the all the way down the side of the building. Each condo owner, I'm told, is being assessed $82,000 to fix this problem.
God.
So, I mean, that gives, and I went to look at these condos. I went to look, I had a realtor come show me these condos, and we were kind of interested. It wasn't right on the water, so we decided not to, and we didn't quite like everything we saw. But, and then I learned a year later that the condo owners are being assessed $82,000 each. And I tell you, they've been working on this for a year. Every time I come out of there, there are screens around the building, you know, where they're doing construction. And from the top to the bottom, water had seeped in through the roof all the way down. And I'm saying, oh, my gosh, if I had bought a condo and then I get assessed $82,000 the first year, I'd have gone nuts. I mean, that would have been that would have been horrible.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yes.
We have a lot of different buildings in our community. Was this just one large high-rise that you're talking about?
Yeah, it wasn't extremely large. It was like maybe a 10-story, fairly large. I mean, it might have been 60 units or so in the building, but it was just a one-building thing. But
wow.
That's a huge amount. I mean, they were nice condos. They were $700,000, $900,000 condos, but every owner in there was being assessed $82,000.
Wow, yeah. Well, I talked to some other friends of mine who live in Ponte Vedra, and, you know, they have a lower maintenance fee, and, you know, their water's included in their maintenance monthly fee. And also our condo manager makes $79,000 a year, and he keeps the building open only to us residents from 9 to 12. And, you know, I mean, I just think some of the money, you know, also he was saying, well, he needs it for paving, and he just paved about 2 or 3 years ago. And
does he get to make all the decisions, or does there's a condo board that is involved?
Well, there is a board, but they all seem to be friends, you know, and none of us that live here seem to have any say about anything. And when I got this letter, I thought, holy cow, to me, you know, some of this stuff that they do doesn't need to be done, and a lot of them feel that way.
And well, organize your own friends and make a little statement at the next board meeting.
Yes, we're all going to the next board meeting.
Yeah.
But I never got a letter like that, and I was really surprised because, you know, when you paid $9,000 and I have a one bedroom and everybody else has three bedrooms and we all pay the same on this, you know, monthly maintenance fee, which I think is unfair anyway.
Yeah. Well, you might have an attorney look at those documents and make sure that you're being charged correctly.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Maureen.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Hey, we're open for another 40-some minutes. If you have a legal question, phone lines are open for you. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. If you have a legal question, I am more than happy to try to help you. I don't know all answers to all legal questions. I don't practice in all areas, but I've hosted this show for 34 years, longest running show in Florida, as far as I know, with the same format, same continual host, and every week. Usually on multiple stations. We're on about 14 stations around Florida. I broadcast Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock on those stations. And every other Sunday morning, I have a 6 o'clock show out of the Tampa area. If I can help you, phone lines are open, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. You know, I had a couple of cases this week. Very, very important for you to check your financial documents. So I've had a couple of cases this week where a spouse had died. You know, the several years roll by, and then the second spouse dies. And what had happened was that the second spouse that died had left everything, like on her IRA accounts. The beneficiary was her now deceased husband, and she didn't have a contingent beneficiary. So now the second spouse dies, leaving everything to a deceased spouse, of course, who had already died. And now the children come in and ask me what to do with this IRA account, this retirement account. Well, hey, what it is there's a deceased person named as a beneficiary and no other contingent beneficiary. So now guess what? You have the accounts in a deceased person's name with no beneficiary. So the answer there is now that has to go through probate. Now, retirement accounts, 401ks, retirement accounts, pensions and all, are really designed not to go through probate because you usually have beneficiaries. When you set these up, you have a beneficiary. But just don't name one. Name a backup. Because now we're stuck with something going through probate that doesn't normally have to go through probate. And if you'd had a contingent beneficiary, the person had a contingent beneficiary in that account, you know, my husband first, my three children second, you would have had no probate process. The three children present their death certificates to where the retirement account is, and then they're given choices. One of my clients came in yesterday here in Jacksonville and was a little bit concerned because they had read a story in the Wall Street Journal that there's a bill floating through Congress now where it's going to be mandatory that the IRA be taken within 10 years. Now a person generally has three choices. They can take it immediately, which would result in them paying a tax on anything that hadn't been taxed, which is usually all of it if it hasn't been taken. They could stretch it over 5 years, or they could take it as an inherited IRA. If you take it as an inherited IRA, then you just withdraw it later on your minimum mandatory distribution schedule. Now Congress wants you to take it all, or it so appears these bills are floating through Congress. We'll see how far they get. Most people think it's a pretty good chance they'll get through, that you have to take all of your inheritance within 10 years, which means, of course, you're going to have to be paying taxes on that within the 10 years as it comes out. Hey, let's go to Vince in Clearwater. Hey, Vince.
Morning, Joe. Joe, I helped my brother-in-law move into an assisted living facility yesterday. He has an auto lease. He's no longer can drive or care for himself, so that necessitated the move. But there's 10 months left on the lease,
mm-hmm.
And what he's being told is that he still owes that the $320 a month for 10 months, or they would put it into auction, and then whatever they don't get to satisfy them, then he would owe that. He doesn't have, he has $100 a month left after the assisted living facility takes from his Social Security. So it's just not possible. I'm trying to find out what other options he might have, if any.
Can you sublease it?
That's a good question. I can ask him for his contract and read that and see. So subleasing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or that would be, they don't have to let him out of the contract. So you're basically stuck with a contract.
Okay.
So either you negotiate a deal with them on an early termination, see if they will waiver a little bit on 10 months, can you reduce it to 5? Or see if you can sublease it.
Okay. So, I didn't know if there was any kind of a voluntary repossession.
Now, how old is this fellow? Well, there is a voluntary. Oh, voluntary. Yeah, but you have to work out a deal on the outstanding payments that are going to.
Okay.
How old is he?
He's 73.
And so he doesn't have much savings or anything?
He has no savings.
And what's the source of his income?
Social Security.
All right, so the negotiation with the people who you want to take the car back is this. You're willing to sign an affidavit. He has no checking, no savings, no investments, no real estate. He basically doesn't have any assets, only receives his Social Security, which is exempt from them taking from him in a lawsuit. So you go in and say, look, he doesn't have anything. We'll sign an affidavit. We're trying to make this easy for you. He can keep the car for the next 10 months and you can sue him, but you're not going to get anything because he doesn't have anything. Work with me on taking the car back.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if you are willing to sign affidavits that you don't have anything, I mean, you have less than $2,000 in your checking account and your only source of income is your checking account. And that's all Social Security, which is exempt from creditors, and you don't have anything else, then they'll take the car back and work a deal with you.
Okay.
Because they sell it at auction, and they get less than they want, and they sue you. Well, good luck in getting anything if you sue me. So you should just take the car back.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Well, thank you for your...
All right. Okay, Vince. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. So now I have... another name. I only have a partial. And what's your name from Seminole? Cheryl? Hello?
Cherry.
Yeah, what's your name?
Cherry.
Cherry. Okay.
Cherry.
All right. What can we do
I have a sister who has an adult autistic child,
mm-hmm.
and she's wanting me to become guardian if something happens to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know how that affects my estate.
Well, a guardian is not a child, so you don't have to leave this child any money from your estate. How old is this child?
40.
Is this something you want to do?
Well, I'm trying to decide that.
Yeah. Well, you're not personally liable financially, although if the child doesn't have money, what do you do? Because now they're living with you and depending upon you. That's a big decision. That's a life-changing decision, basically.
Right.
Because now you are pretty much a volunteer caregiver for someone who is going to need your constant attention probably. I think it would be an admirable thing for someone to do, but only if they really, really, really want to do it and they're service-minded in their heart and want to provide a home for this child. So does the parent have money they're going to leave in a trust for the care of the child? I know the child might not be able to have money themselves because they could lose their government benefits if they were to receive an inheritance.
Right. There is some money set aside for that. But she is in Massachusetts, and I'm in Florida. The adult child is in semi-independent living. He's mm-hmm. in a group home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're not going to live physically under your roof then?
Probably not.
Okay. Well, that would be an important thing to figure out, so... If the child, are you going to go up and visit where the child lives, maybe? Maybe talk to the people where the child is living?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that would be good. Then you'll have a much better picture of what your obligations would be. Now, usually what would happen is you, the guardian, if the child is in a living facility and is going to be able to stay there, usually, they call you if the child goes to the hospital. They call you if the child has a special circumstance where they need permission. You're responsible for maybe an annual report to the court on the child's assets and any change of status of the child. So really, if the child is in independent living, there's really minimal. You'll get a few phone calls and you have to do an annual report. And then whatever else you do on a volunteer basis would generally be it. You could ask to speak to the to the attorney that's in charge of the guardianship and just verify with the attorney what would be expected of you on the legal side of things. Usually, a lot of times the attorney will file an annual report. You just have to sign it. Things like that. So I would definitely visit the facility. I would definitely talk to the attorney for the guardian. I would check and make sure there's enough financial support to continue what the child is doing now. But I don't think you are personally responsible financially. And I think you'll have minimal, under the circumstances I'm hearing, there's really minimal things you have to do. You have to respond to their phone calls if the time of need, the child needs some decision made in the benefit of the child, and just talk to the child's guardianship attorney to see what else might be required on that end.
Okay, there's not likely to be any way that that would affect my estate with my bequeath to my own son.
No, not at all.
Okay.
You're not adopting the
Thank
child.
You,
yeah, you're not adopting the child as the legal child. You're just being appointed the guardian.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Phone lines are open. If you have a number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Mark in Tampa. Hey, Mark.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, I have recently acquired, they were handed down to me, some old coins. And I'm a suspicious person by nature, especially being living in Florida for 25 years and know what goes on, especially with seniors, which I am. I was asked, I want to have coins graded, and I have to leave the coins with them. Is there a way to protect myself to know that I'm getting back exactly what I asked them to look at and grade, other than take a picture with a cell phone? And would that protect me?
Well, I think if you turn them over and you have an inventory list for them to sign, and you have every coin documented as to the date, the mint, the condition, and pictures, you know, you can put a bunch of coins on a piece of paper and take a picture of a bunch of coins at once.
Okay.
I can tell you who I deal with in this circumstance. I know you're living in Tampa, and this place is in Bel Air. But I have complete confidence that they're totally trustworthy. And I've taken many coins in this place that are in the states that I'm dealing with for appraisals and evaluations. And this is what they do every day. I mean, they're very well known. And I could give you their name if you want a trustworthy source to have these coins evaluated.
They're in Pinellas, you said, right?
Yeah, they're in Bel Air. They're in Pinellas County.
Because I was looking on the cell phone at some of the ones here in Tampa. Yeah, I'm highly, especially after yesterday, I saw on my phone with the news, daily news, coin counterfeiters, and they're fooling the experts. And this is with gold coins.
Yeah, these people have been in business for 50 years. I mean, in their, it's family run. They've been around a long, long, long time, and that's what they do. They have a full-time person. Now, every time I go in there, you know, there's people in there selling gold chains, gold coins, all kinds of antiques and old things, and they have experts in all of those areas to appraise and give you a written evaluation.
Okay, I would love their name and address if you have it, or a phone number, and I can do that.
Yeah, why don't you email me and I'll send it to you?
Okay.
Can you email me?
And their family, say that again?
Yeah, okay, I'll just tell you the name. It's called the Silver Queen.
Silver Queen?
Yep.
Queen, Q-U-I-Q-U-E-E-N, okay.
Uh-huh. And they're in Bel Air. They're right on West Bay Drive.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and they are very, very great. And you can go in there and tell them that I referred them, because most of the people in there know who I am, because I bring estates. I mean, we deal with a lot of estates, you know, trust estates, probate estates, and there's a lot of stuff in there that has to be appraised to satisfy the beneficiaries. I've taken a piece of jewelry. I've taken a nice gold piece of jewelry in there, And I've taken it to some other places because sometimes I feel like I need to get multiple evaluations. They've always been, I consider, the most honest and have given me the best price. So
fantastic. Well, that's a great, great thing. Yes. They're kind of hard to find in this day and age in Florida.
Yep.
Yes. You said West Bay.
Yeah, right on West Bay. It's called the Silver Queen. And if you don't, if you can't find it, you can email me. I'm Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Attorney John Frazier, who's calling in with a Medicaid VA tip of the week. John's a VA Medicaid attorney with our firm. Hello, John.
Hey, Joe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
So today I was going to talk about the assisted living Medicaid waiting list and how to deal with that if you were trying to obtain Medicaid benefits for somebody in an assisted living facility. I think the first thing to understand is that there's a very significant difference between an assisted living facility and a skilled nursing facility. And I would say that a large percentage of our prospective clients who contact us are, first of all, not aware of that difference. And I think the way to think about it is, just like there's a licensing difference between a physician and a nurse, it's the same thing with an assisted living facility versus a nursing facility. Right now, there is no waiting list, and to my knowledge, there's never actually been a waiting list for a Medicaid in a skilled nursing facility here in Florida. But for many years now, we've had an extensive waiting list in assisted living facilities, and I've heard numbers something like 40,000 person waiting list. So there's two ways to deal with that problem. The first way is if the person is in an assisted living facility, you can call the state of Florida. It's a group called Elder Source, and put the person on the waiting list. But that waiting list can be indefinite. I've had people run out of money on that waiting list, and I've had people actually pass away on that waiting list. And if the person runs out of money, they then would have to transition to a skilled nursing facility where there is no waiting list. The ideal way to deal with that waiting list is to actually have the person be admitted to a skilled nursing facility. And then if they're on Medicaid for 60 days in the nursing facility, after 60 days, they completely bypass the waiting list and become eligible for assisted living Medicaid. So, and I've had numerous clients do that over the years, but the person has to be medically qualified to go into a skilled nursing facility first. So that's basically what we can do.
All right. Well, John, before I let you off here, how does a husband whose wife has to go in the nursing home,
mm-hmm.
how does he protect his estate for his children?
Situation like that, and we're assuming that the husband is still living in the community.
Yep.
So what we do in all cases like that is we have to bring the spouse that's applying for Medicaid to less than $2,000. And there are a variety of ways that we can do that. If it's a first marriage, what we typically would do is just transfer the assets over to the community spouse. If it's a second, third, or fourth, or fifth marriage, and there's children on each side, we have to be concerned about the beneficiaries if they have separate beneficiaries. But the first thing we normally would have to do, whether it's a first marriage or they've had
multiple. Well, let's say in my example it's a first marriage.
Okay.
And let's say the couple has $300,000.
Okay.
And let's say the wife goes into the nursing home.
Okay, and you're talking about $300,000 in, like, countable assets.
Yeah. And let's say not including the home, which we know is exempt.
Yeah, and a car would be exempt.
And a car. So the husband comes in, changes everything over to just his name.
Mm-hmm.
And if he died first and the wife is still in the nursing home, has a trust, let's say, that avoids probate, goes directly to the three children.
Well, there's a couple ways that it can be dealt with. I think one of the issues is the Florida elective share.
Yeah, that's really my question, actually.
Yeah, so you can set up what is called an elective share trust to put the spouse on Medicaid lives longer than the community spouse, which I think would be a rare fact pattern. It certainly could happen. But if somebody's in a nursing facility, their life expectancy is, you know, certainly going to be less than the community spouse, who's presumably much healthier. But that's the way that you would technically have to deal with that. Is
yeah. Suppose the husband just creates a trust, leaving everything to the three children. Husband dies, and everything gets distributed to the three children outright because there's no provision for the spouse in the document. So who is there to check in that case on?
It's my understanding that the state of Florida does not pursue that, and that they have not pursued that. But I think in theory they could. but I don't believe that they've ever done that before.
Yeah. So, now, normally I thought about this week because this actually happened to me. So, and actually, it's a client that you are working on. Mm-hmm. So the husband is the wife's power of attorney, of course, and that's how the Medicaid got done. But,
okay.
But there is no power of attorney when the there is no power of attorney when the husband dies, if he dies first.
Yeah.
So then the spouse in the the nursing home has no power of attorney and really has no guardian at that point. So there's no one pushing for the elective share claim that would have any responsibility to do so right when the husband dies. Now, there might be a guardian appointed later,
mm-hmm.
and that would be an interesting question.
In theory, the state of Florida could pursue it, and I think also I am aware of one case that I heard about many years back, and mm-hmm. I think it was a second marriage type situation
mm-hmm.
where that was set up, and I think the children of the spouse on Medicaid actually pursued that, and they were successful. So that could, in theory, happen.
All right. All right, John, give us your contact information if someone wants to contact you.
The office number is 727-586-3306, extension 104. My cell phone is 813-431-3193. And my email address is johnjohn@attypip.com.
Okay, and if anyone wants to contact John and he couldn't get all that down, just you can email me or call me on the show here and we'll give you the information. And John, thank you so much, and you have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, so let's go to Scott in Bradenton. Scott, are you there? Okay, and I can't read all of my note in here about what the producer in Tampa wants me to do.
Give your office number.
Oh, give my office number. All right. So if you would like her to contact our office, we have a toll-free number, 800-226-3529. That's 800-226-3529. If you would like to email me, that would just be Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. Let's go to Robert in Jacksonville.
Good morning, Mr. Pippin. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
I'm calling with a question because of a situation with my neighbor. She and her boyfriend are selling their present homes and in the process of buying a home together in Jacksonville Beach. I was interested in learning, and I suggested to her to inquire about the differences between joint ownership and possible advantages of purchasing it in a trust.
Well, if there were, okay, so there are several ways to buy a home. You can buy it jointly with right of survivorship, which means if one of them died, the other one would be the total owner. They can buy it just two names, no magic words afterwards, which usually is tenants in common, which means they each own an undivided one half. And if they died and had a will or a trust, that one half could be devised to whoever they want.
Let me give you a little more detail.
Okay.
They're both divorced with children from a previous marriage. They both want to have lifetime estates in the new home, and they want their interest to be able to convey to their children from the first marriage after they are deceased.
All right. Well, I had a case exactly like this week, and here's what I did. They bought it tenants in common, which means they each own half. They each did a trust that put their one-half interest in the home into the trust, but gave their friend, let's call it, a life estate in their half. And then when the second one died, each half went to their respective children. And
so you're suggesting ownership is tenants in common.
Right.
And both have individual trusts to own their half.
Own their half. And then in that trust, which is just like a will, you can give the other person the right to live in their half for life.
Understood.
All right. And then upon the second death, each half goes to each respective children.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that.
All right. That'd work, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
And then if they don't live together, they can always do whatever they want to with their half. I mean, they can... Actually, a half owner can force the sale of the property. So let's suppose that they took out the provision about the life estate because they weren't getting along, and then one of them died and their half went directly to their children. Their children then could force the sale of the property to get the money from their half.
So with joint ownership, one could force the other one out.
With tenants in common.
I see.
Yep.
Okay. But with rights of survivorship, they can't.
No, because it automatically belonged to the survivor. Then you wouldn't have a life estate. You'd just have outright ownership.
Oh, so it's really not workable that way then.
Not with right of survivorship. It only is really going to work. What you wanted to accomplish or what they wanted to accomplish could only really be accomplished, in my mind, with tenants in common with the life estate provision in their estate planning documents.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, let's go to Alan in Tampa.
Hey, Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks for your show. It's a really great service to everybody in the community. Two questions for you. One, someone that has their primary assets are their home and retirement accounts. What happens when they pass away and there are unsecured debts? Let's say there's $10,000 in a credit card bill that's due. What happens to that? Is it the estate?
There's no other money. There's no other money in the retirement in the estate.
You know, maybe a couple hundred dollars in a checking account, but all the assets are either in accounts with beneficiaries or in the home.
Well, the it's very likely in that case the creditors wouldn't get anything.
So they have no claim to the house?
No, the homestead's exempt from creditors.
Okay.
And the retirement accounts with beneficiaries are exempt from creditors. So
okay.
Basically, right. You'd send the credit card statements back saying no probate estate, no assets in estate. Because at that point, the minute they died, the home is free from creditors and the retirement accounts have been distributed.
Okay. Great. Second question, when you have a living trust and you put your homestead into the trust, is there advantages to, you know, through a quitclaim deed, is there advantages to recording the deed immediately versus at time of death?
Well, I tell most of my clients the deed doesn't have to be recorded until death because there's no change in ownership. The person who owned it and the person who created the trust are the same person, and the trust is not a different entity. And so because there's no change in ownership, what the first successor or trustee, personal representative named in the documents can do is come see me or another attorney and bring in the documents. So at that point, we would file the will and record the deed. The title company sometimes make an issue about delivery, which mm-hmm. I think is total nonsense because the grantor, the creator of the trust and the owner of the property delivered the property to himself as trustee of the trust when he took the documents out of the attorney's office. So there was delivery because it was
right.
The same owner. And because it was delivered, it can be recorded any time. Now, if I were the grantor and created the trust and put my property into the trust, I haven't recorded my deeds into my trust because I don't need to. If I, however, sold my house to another party, of course the deed would be recorded because that's a change of ownership. It's not really a change of ownership when you deed it to your own trust.
Right, but if you record it immediately, you have to deal with the bank holding the mortgage to change the way that...
No, there's no change of ownership, so the bank can't do anything about that either.
Okay.
The only advantage that I hear people talk about is, well, I think it should be recorded because I don't want to have it lost. So my response to that is, look, keep it with your will and trust. You're not going to lose those. Right. You know, safeguard some originals and just keep your deed in with those papers. But if you want to record it, you know, I'll record it for you. It just doesn't have to be recorded at this time.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank
All right.
you very much.
All right,
Joe.
Thank you.
Have a great
All right.
day.
Thank you. Phone lines are open. Give you the toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines open. Let's go to Barbara in Odessa.
Could that be me?
That could be you, I think.
Well, actually, I live in the Villages, but whatever.
Okay. What station are you listening to?
Excuse me?
What station are you listening to?
I'm listening to a Tampa station on my iPhone.
Oh, have iHeart. Okay.
Exactly. That's it.
All right.
And I particularly listen to it because I used to listen to it when I lived in Tampa. And I don't know of a station up here that you can get where you can hear you.
Yeah, we
and
used to be, well, thank you. We used to be on a station there in Leesburg for a while. We might revisit trying to get back on that station, so.
Oh, well, I'll have to watch for that.
All right.
I have a question that I don't even know if there's any way you can answer it the way I want to hear it, but I'm going to try to tell you what it is. My mother and her sister, my aunt, inherited a land and a summer cottage on Lake Superior in Minnesota. Now, maybe you don't deal with land in Minnesota, but hear
well,
me
actually,
out.
I had an attorney on my staff that was licensed in Minnesota and Florida.
Oh.
And she retired, but I know where she is, so if I need to find out, maybe I could.
Well, this is gorgeous property. It was developed back in the early 1900s. And the cottage isn't worth that much, but the property is just fabulous. All right, my mother and her sister inherited it, and then they gave it to my siblings, my mother's children, which were four, and my aunt's children, and she had four. So that was equal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Four and four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so eight people inherited this property. And we paid the taxes and done some improvements and so on and so forth. But the four of my aunt's children are from Michigan, and they use it a lot. And it's only really used in the summer and fall.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister and I, of course, I live in Florida, and my children love it there, but they don't get to go there, and my sister's children don't. And my sister and I wanted to sell it, even though we hate to, but we thought it makes sense. Instead of paying the taxes and taking care of the improvements, because you really can't improve this cottage much. It's pretty much had it. But anyway, we want to sell it, but the four in Michigan refuse because they go there every summer and they want to keep it. Now, we'd like to sell it to them, but they don't want to buy. They say they have no money. Is there any way at all that we can sell this when it's divided in half?
So let me answer this if the property was in Florida, which I know it's not, but I don't know Minnesota law, and I can't give advice about Minnesota law because I'm not licensed there.
Right.
So what you could do is to contact a Minnesota attorney and ask them if there's anything called a partition sale.
Partition sale.
Yeah. Now, in Florida, if people in that same circumstance, you know, wanted to sell the property and the rest of them didn't, you could force the sale through the courts through what's called a partition sale.
Oh, really?
So what you need to do, I think the magic words are call a Minnesota attorney, tell them you want to. And that what that usually does, it forces the four who don't want to buy it to buy it. Because they don't want a new owner. They might want
to. Well, what if they can't afford it? What can they do?
Well, they can give a. They can get a mortgage. They can get a. I know you
That's
don't.
That's what we thought. We thought. Well, why can't they mortgage it at least? You know, it wouldn't be that much because they could have their children help too.
Who actually owns the property that you lease from?
The eight of us.
Well, you own the cottage, right?
No, we own the property. We own the whole thing.
You have a deed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, why is there? What do you lease? Do you lease the cottage and not the land? Because you own the property?
No, we own all of it.
Oh, I thought you said lease.
No. We own all of it.
All right. Well, no. Well, there you go. I thought there was. I've heard of these places. There's some places in Georgia where you kind of own the cottage, but you lease the land from the state.
Oh.
There are all kind of things on lakes, and they're beautiful and all that, but you don't really have total ownership, and you're not in total control, and there are restrictions on what you can do with the lease. I thought we were maybe talking about something like that. But if you totally own it, I'm sure in Minnesota there's some way you can force a sale of it. You need a real estate attorney in Minnesota to advise you about that.
So you need someone in Minnesota.
Yeah.
See, they even agreed last summer. They said, well, since we're the only ones that use it, we'll agree to pay the taxes and the improvements and, you know, buy anything that needs to be bought. But now they've reneged on that because I don't know what he is to me, nephew or whatever he is. My aunt's son said, well, we can't pay the taxes. It's illegal. And I said to my sister, well, what do you mean it's illegal? If we give him the money to pay the taxes, you know what I'm saying.
Okay, here's the exact, if it were me, here's what I would do.
Okay.
All right. So I would go online and Google around for a real estate person close to this area that seems to be active in selling real estate.
I think I know somebody.
All right. Well, you call the realtor and say, look, I'm interested. Here's the circumstances you just told me. I mean, I want to sell the property. I have other owners that are not cooperating. So what can you tell me, and what real estate attorney do you deal with on issues like this? So you got a realtor that can give you an appraisal on the value of the property.
Right.
And hopefully that realtor will have a good attorney contact that, and the realtor is going to be very interested in forcing the sale because the realtor is going to make a commission, and they're going to have a good attorney that can make all this happen for you. So there you go. You'll have an appraisal on the property, and you'll have an attorney looking to force the sale.
So you think you could force the sale eventually?
Yep. Yeah, not eventually. You could probably do it right away almost.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's just it. It was in Florida, that would be the answer. What the answer is in Minnesota might be different, but
yeah,
that's what I would try.
Well, I appreciate the help.
My pleasure.
Hard. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And by the way, we have offices there in the villages. We have a... multiple locations all over Florida. We have several offices in Pinellas, Hillsborough, Polk. We have offices in Trinity, Pasco County. We have offices in Zephyr Hills. We have offices down in Sarasota area. We have offices in Leesburg, Claremont, the Villages, Jacksonville, St. Augustine area. If you'd like to contact our firm, we don't charge anything for the first visit to consult with you on estate planning issues and Medicaid issues and probate and trust litigation issues. None of those are a fee associated with the first visit. If you want us to review documents for you, there's no charge for the review of documents to give you your different options and opinions. If you'd like to contact us, our toll-free office number is 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. If you want to email me, it's Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. If you like our free estate planning poster sheet, I'd love to send that to you. It's a double-sided sheet. One side has five articles about estate planning and what your options are. The other side has all of our contact information and offices and attorneys and phone numbers and radio shows and so forth. If you'd like that, again, you can get it. The toll-free office number is 1-800-226-3529. If you want to email me, it's Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. Hey, you have a wonderful weekend. So long.